Back together again, you and I, Friday, wrapping up the week, February 17th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We talked about a controversial idea to pay striking workers in Connecticut unemployment compensation after 2 weeks on a picket line. Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong updated the current controversy over Connecticut beach fees, and Journal Inquirer Manchester columnist Chris Powell stopped by with his monthly check-in. So a couple of things that I've warned you about over the past 2 or 3 years, and I hate to come on and beat the drum and say, hey, I was right, but I was. So it's just more proof that when I give you these warnings, you should probably listen. Number one, what do I keep saying over and over and over again? Don't get over-sexied, if that's... Can I make that a show term here? Like over-sexy, the sexy race in politics here in Connecticut is the governor. What have I been telling you for the past coming up on 4 years I've done this show here? It is the men and women in the General Assembly who come up with some decent ideas, some really good ideas, and some stuff that's just, you look at and you go, wow, I don't want this, even though I voted for them. Well, let's take a look at the latter, not the former. Let's take a look at the latter here. And one other thing I tell you always, and I'm not the only one saying it. Keep in mind that any year after a governor's race in Connecticut is when the crazy stuff starts to come out of Hartford. Now, last year, or after the 2020 election, heading into 2022, you didn't hear anything about, you know, mandatory voting bills that we've talked about. You didn't hear anything about state funding for women who want to come here and have abortions. You didn't hear anything about kids being able to sign off on their medical treatment at 12 years old. You didn't hear about any of those cockamamie ideas that have been posted now. And again, they're posted because we're in the odd years. See, the odd years are the years that you should cringe in Hartford, because usually there's budget stuff that comes up in those years, and it's a longer session. So some of the men and women up there can do stuff that probably most of their constituents would think is crazy, but they're doing it. Here's the latest thing that's been revived, and I don't know whether you know about this or not. I remember talking about this on the show about 2 years ago, two and a half years ago, but then that little thing called COVID started, and we had to kind of shift gears. I'll take this from today's edition of the Connecticut News Junkie, but you remember this because it has reared its head again. And this is one of those things that you read about and then you juxtapose with the governor and everybody else and all these business organizations all over the place saying, hey, Connecticut's open for business. Come on in. And then we hear of this. And by the way, this is the Facebook question of the day, facebook.com/WICC600. You tell me what you think. The General Assembly's Labor and Public Employees Committee is advancing a bill that would make, get this now, you ready for this? Two hands on the wheel, deep breath. I don't want you to run off the road when you hear this. There is talk of pushing a bill in Hartford that would make workers eligible for unemployment benefits after they've gone on strike for 2 weeks. So we're back to this craziness again. Yes. The left-leaning members of the General Assembly's Labor and Public Employees Committee, chaired by Senator Julie Kushner of Danbury, and she's one of these people who attended. You remember that thing, that dinner that Dick Blumenthal went to a couple of years ago? Remember that? He had no idea that it was a dinner, in part noting some sort of anniversary of the Communist Party. You know, they did a special thing for Chairman Mao, Joe Stalin. I'm only kidding. Well, I wasn't there, so I don't know. But, yeah, remember that? And it got out and made even the mainstream media in this state. And Senator Blumenthal complained that he had no idea the dinner he was going to was connected to the Communist Party. Well, Julie Kushner was there as well. And, of course, she did the two-step there. Well, it was for workers, not necessarily the Communist Party. Whatever. So get this. And tell me what you think of this. Look, I'm all for workers being able to go on strike. I get that. Workers, to get better wages, better conditions, have gone on strike for a couple hundred years in this country. That's not the point. Unemployment compensation is not for when you go on strike. Unemployment compensation is when you get fired or laid off. Usually when you get laid off. If you're fired for cause, I don't think you have to consent to pay unemployment, or it's tough sometimes for that person to collect. But let's just say you're laid off. And a lot of us have been there. You know, fortunately, some have not. I've been there, and Lord knows, in the radio and media business, everybody in this in the building I'm in right now has probably gotten laid off once or twice in our radio careers. It happens. It's a high-risk, high-reward business. But the couple of times it's happened to me, thankfully no more than one or two, I've been able to collect unemployment because my employer has paid into the unemployment trust fund. And that's one of the things you have to do as an employer. You pay into the fund if you're going to lay somebody off. In other words, the state says, well, listen, you've got to pay into this insurance fund, because if you decide, for whatever reason, as an employer, to eliminate that person's position, to lay them off for whatever reason, there is money that we will then administer through the state's unemployment compensation fund. We know all about that, right? But this bill, I mean, get this. Who thinks up this stuff in Hartford? Who does, honestly? The bill under consideration would make workers eligible for unemployment benefits after they've gone on strike for 2 weeks. Why are we paying striking workers, or why would you want to pay striking workers? Why would you want to pay striking workers? People who, for whatever reason, I understand how labor disputes work, but why would you want to pay striking workers out of the unemployment fund? Well, I know why. Because there's a steady flow of money there. And there's incentive there for the employer not to lay people off. The committee moved the bill onto the state, to the Senate, rather, on a party-line vote, part of a crowded mid-morning agenda. Now, apparently, they're doing this in New York, so, of course, we have to do it. Supporters say the such a move, in other words, if after 2 weeks, now, this is their logic on this. I don't quite get this. You tell me what you think. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Supporters say the change, if this was done in Connecticut's unemployment laws, would help level the playing field for workers in a dispute with their employers. I don't think it levels the playing field. I think it sides with the workers here. Now, if you want to set up some sort of fun, see, here's the reason they're doing this. They want to make this an add-on to unemployment because the structure is already there. Now, if you want to do this, fine. I have an idea. Do what you did with this family paid family leave program. I don't know. Set up another deduction on people's paychecks. Have them pay for it. The bill would ensure, Julie Kushner said, the bill would ensure that working families, I hate that phrase, everybody works. Stop it with this working families thing from the left. All this drone that they have, working families. Yes, rich people work too. Sometimes they work a hell of a lot harder than poor people. The bill will ensure that working families are not starved out when they take a stand in terms of entering into a labor dispute because they want to make significant improvements in conditions. Really, Senator? Maybe the stuff they want, maybe, and I know there's a give and take on labor issues, maybe the stuff they want is ridiculous. And the employer says, no, I can't do that. Or I can offer you a raise, but not what you want. My cash flow is in that. So why are we, explain to me, why would the state of Connecticut side with workers in a private labor dispute? And I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound like a jerk here, but unemployment insurance is for certain types of unemployment. How does it make any sense? You tell me. I'm waiting for somebody to explain this to me. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. How does it make any sense mandating that a portion of payments made to the unemployment insurance system in this state go to workers who decided to go on strike? I don't quite understand that. Kushner said sometimes those are wage improvements. Wage improvements. Those are raises. Is that how we refer to raises now? Wage improvements. It's not a test drive. It's a guest drive. It's not an ashtray. It's an ash receptacle. It's not a strip club or a you-know-what bar. It's a gentleman's club. Now we have wage improvements. We don't have raises anymore in 2023. We have wage improvements. Yes. A lot of times they are to protect existing pension or health care benefits. So, again, just admit you're taking the side of the worker here. And again, this whole thing to me is laughable because the General Assembly will debate something like this and probably move it forward. And by the way, the governor, if you read the stories, the governor's noncommittal on this, probably because he knows that this is ludicrous on the face of it. I'm sorry. It's not that I don't think people on strike don't have valid concerns. That's not the point. But that's not what an unemployment payment system is for. And why, you see, and this speaks to a broader thing. Why are our representatives in Hartford, mainly the Democratic majority, why do they, what is it about them? They have this maniacal, almost sacramental determination to nip and tuck at businesses with this tax and that fee and having to do this and that. No wonder it's tough sometimes to get businesses in here. When the bill was raised for a public hearing last week, Eric Getty, who we've had on this show, a vice president for public policy at the Connecticut Business and Industry Association, questioned whether Connecticut's unemployment fund could handle what he expected to be an increase in the amount of benefits paid out. Well, you know what they're going to do there, don't you? Don't you know how the back of this plays out? They just raise what an employer is going to have to pay for his or her compensation, his or her payments into this fund. This is ludicrous. Now, if you want to figure out a way, I think anyway, to help striking workers, well, you can consider other things, maybe. But to me, and you would have to wait 2 weeks, I understand that. But isn't this the state of Connecticut and henceforth our tax money and our representatives and certain power brokers in Hartford? Isn't this a case of them taking sides here in a labor dispute? So what do you think? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. There is a bill that apparently has advanced out of committee, now heads to the full Senate, that would make workers eligible for unemployment benefits after they've gone on strike for 2 weeks. So they themselves made the decision, for whatever reason, it happens all the time, I get it, to go on strike. Well, that's not what the unemployment compensation system is for, is it not? Something else that's being debated in Hartford that affects a good chunk of Connecticut, all the folks living across the shoreline from the tip of Greenwich all the way up through Fairfield County, New Haven County, Guilford, Brantford, Madison, out east to New London. A lot of the residents in Connecticut do have access to town beaches. But there's a constant question about who else can have access to those beaches. Who do those beaches belong to? What rights do the shoreline towns have to regulate, essentially, how many people can go to those beaches because a lot of people say without regulation, it's impractical for just that strip of beach to accommodate everyone in the state. There was a hearing on that schedule for today. Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong, friend of the program, with us to talk about that. Hey, Tony, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. It's always great to be with you.
Well, thank you.
And you're absolutely right. In the Supreme Court decision in Connecticut in 2001, it affirms that our coastal access are for everyone. I think the question at hand is about access and capacity. And today's a great example. There's no problem with parking. In fact, in most of these communities, until Memorial Day, there is no cost. People from out of town can go. And today, they can have a free-for-all today, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, Tony, there's a bill up there, I guess, that what would set a limit of no more than double the fee for an out-of-town person to come and park on the days that cash parking is required. It would be, what, a ceiling of double the fee as a town or city resident would pay, correct?
Absolutely. It's a proposal that's been raised by my respected colleague, Representative Lamar from New Haven, who has been an advocate of this, and we have very healthy discussions about it. For me, representing coastal communities, but also understanding and living in these communities, for me, it's simplified by three quick things. The first one is about capacity, not only from a standpoint of our fragile coastline in regards to environmental impact. You can only take so many amount of people. The second one is it's a skewed supply versus demand. I mean, like I said today, there's no problem. And out of the season, when you're looking at nearly 70% of the year where it's not an issue, but in 30% of the year during the summer peak months where everybody wants to go to the beach, it's an outstripping of the availability and supply. And that is one way that our communities, coastal communities, look to manage. The other major factor is these coastal communities bear the brunt of maintenance cost, keeping the beaches clean, making sure the infrastructure is maintained, and making sure traffic safety is in place. And as we go into traffic safety, one of the biggest concerns with a lot of excess capacity, Paul, is what happens to public safety and pedestrian, biking, and traffic when you overload the narrow beach communities that host so many of the people if you open it up.
Connecticut's got about 3.5, 3.6 million people. A bunch of those people like the beach. Maybe it's a daily thing for them. Maybe it's a big day out. Connecticut has some fine beaches all the way from the tip of Greenwich up through Fairfield, New Haven counties, out east, Branford, Clinton, Westbrook, Hammonasset Beach State Park, all the way to the Rhode Island line. But how do we regulate? How do localities, municipalities, cities and towns, what's a fair way to regulate how many people can go to those beaches, which in the peak of time, about 30% are absolutely jammed? And there are people who say, hey, also some of the beach fares here, if you're going to double and triple costs, it locks out folks from other economic strata in adjoining areas. Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong talking about that. It's a hearing held on a bill today that would limit the out-of-town fare to double beach pass fare, or the parking passes to double what a local person pays a resident of that city or town. Tony, what are your thoughts on that? How do you respond to that, to some people who say, yeah, you know, especially in Fairfield County, with a wink and a nod, of course they want the these fares and parking fares high because there are some people they don't want there. What do you say to that?
Well, I think no one should be excluded from the beaches, and indeed no one is denied access to the beach. It really is about an ability to park, and that is a concern relative to capacity and safety. Now, many of those beaches that have the higher rates that are being under scrutiny, they have ample people who get dropped off by Uber, who get dropped off by family members or friends, or they even walk a little further distance to be able to get to the beach. No one is denied access to the beach. It's a relative capacity question and a safety question to parking. Now, you say some of these rates may be excessively high, And that is an open topic of conversation. What is relative to the cost of being able to park? So I think that's an open conversation with any bill. It's what the public hearing process is all about, Paul, is we hear different viewpoints. Now, this bill has appeared in many different formats. This year's bill language is a little bit different. I think the tone is much more conciliatory in recognizing that that there is some aspect of compromise. And I applaud the proponent of this bill to offer that. So I think there's topic of conversation, but to say that there is an open right and open access creates a plethora of challenges and problems that the host community bears most of the brunt of the burden. And that's why you see legislators, Democrat or Republican, in coastal communities that live there and hear and bear the brunt of these concerns, raising questions about the language and the philosophy of this bill.
And again, Tony, this is another bill, whether it's the beach bill, the housing bill, the zoning bills. We get a plethora of these bills every session, and it's good for discussion. As you say, it's a vigorous debate. To what point, Tony, is there a healthy balance between the needs and wants of the state looking out to all people while also understanding, like you say, there are local concerns here, the local police department having to staff a beach when, you know, June, July, August, there are thousands of people on those beaches all looking to have a good time, but there will always be an element there that, you know, we saw some of the fights last summer there that broke out. So a lot of these towns, Tony, have concerns about, number one, I would think that the cost to police the beaches and to provide public safety is a big issue as well.
Absolutely. And there is a significant cost to maintain the cleanliness, the safety, and the preservation of our fragile coastline. Make no mistake, Long Island Sound is a regional national treasure, and state, federal, and local funds go into contributing it. And let me be clear, even for people that oppose this bill, let me be clear, every single individual affirms that coastal access is available for everyone. The devil's in the details of how the cost is being borne, and is it a free-for-all, or do we have to manage some degree of safety and public consideration? The fact is, you have that input, and this is why we have a legislative process. But the important part is local entities through their representatives. And I make that point clear, Paul, Democrats and Republicans that represent the community is offering a perspective that other individuals that don't have coastal communities may not understand. So that's truly the deliberation that we have. And I'm so grateful that we're able to do it in a deliberative process where we are interacting and learning from each other.
Tony, I only saw the cover page of the bill. I didn't read it too deeply. Is there anything in the bill? Is there any notion to say, hey, and maybe this already happens, forgive me if I didn't know, is there any notion to say, hey, the state should kick in more to these cities and towns, maybe as a reimbursement for police protection or fire protection or water safety, especially in the heaviest months of the year? Does that happen at all or not?
It's always a topic of conversation, and part of the public hearing that ended right around 3:15 today is to get the feedback, to get the insight from municipalities, from individuals, from experts, and have that deliberation. But we have to think about it. It truly is a capacity issue because the state provides funding and public access for our great public parks. Sherwood Island in this area, Hammonasset, the beaches that you cited here. When it was a extremely hot summer, those beaches, those public beaches with open access to everyone, not only Connecticut residents, but New York and Massachusetts and Rhode Island access, they had to close off the beaches.
Yeah.
So nobody could use them when parking was beyond capacity. So whatever money we put in, we're dealing with natural resources in an incredibly beautiful and resourceful coastline, but they just don't make any more of it. And we have a limited capacity, and that's the challenge, right? We're dealing with a supply and demand issue, and unfortunately, come 2 or 3 months of this year, the demand is far outstripping the supply that we have. Like I began with today, Anybody can go to the beach. No one's going to bug you.
Yeah,
no. But no one wants to go, do they?
No, no. A little chilly and wet. Tony, thank you. Tony Wong keeping side of the beach issue, which seems to pop up every year. Tony, have a good weekend. We'll talk down the road. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Paul. Have a great day.
All right, there you go. All right, folks. So, again, will this bill get passed in Hartford? Maybe, maybe not. The bill. And, again, a lot of times they have these discussions just to get people discussing. And Tony was talking about a bill, I guess, that would put a limit of what a city or town could charge for a parking pass to double for an out-of-towner, right? Versus what they charge a town resident. So basically, if you're a town resident, just taking a figure out of the air here, $50 a year, $75 a year, the most the town could charge for an out-of-town parking would be, you know, $100 or $150. All right, we'd like to check in with this gentleman about once a month or so. Chris Powell, former managing editor at the Journal Inquirer of Manchester, still writes a column for the paper, and it's actually seen all over the state, which is a good thing. Mr. Powell, happy, what is this? It's February. I forgot. Chris, happy February to you.
Well, it's a mild February day, so yes, we can be happy about it. Thanks.
Yeah, so good to hear from you again, Chris. A couple things I want to touch base on with you. First, one of your recent columns, you pointed out some things maybe going on and not going on with the state's paid leave program. And it's interesting, Chris, because here at the station, and I'm sure other stations across the state, we're running commercials that are kind of urging businesses, hey, make sure you keep up with this. This is the law now, wink, wink. But stepping back, what is your whole take on what we've seen so far in this?
Well, I was prompted to write about it because of a really wonderful investigative report that was done by Connecticut Public Broadcasting the other day. Connecticut Public reported that the paid leave program was denying a third of its applicants, and this was much higher than what the legislature and the advocates of the paid leave program would were expecting. The reason for the denial supposedly is paperwork, and the paid leave authority is working on that problem to try to streamline it. But my complaint is that even if the paperwork problem, the application problem is streamlined, we're still going to be rejecting, or really even ignoring many people who could use some, you know, paid time off because their personal emergencies don't qualify. The paid leave program is supposed to cover only caregiving for yourself mm-hmm. or loved ones, but you know, people have wrecked cars or disabled cars all the time, or their apartments burn up. They face all sorts of misfortunes that have nothing to do with the necessity of caregiving, and these misfortunes are not covered at all. I mean, you've got a lot of people who are single, don't have big families to worry about, and I have to wonder, I mean, why isn't any emergency covered by this this program? All this program is self-insurance, Paul. It just gives you your money back. There's a special tax that all of us pay, a special 0.5% state income tax that we pay that goes into this program. And, you know, we can get it back if we've got a sick kid, but we can't get it back if we've got a totaled car or an apartment fire or anything else. And I think that's crazy. The program ought to be set up to cover everybody who's got an emergency, if it's going to be a program at all. I mean, this is the kind of thing people could have easily done for themselves just by setting up a savings account mm-hmm. at a bank or credit union or something like that. But, you know, government's got to have a program to do it. And in doing it through the program, we cut off a third of the applicants, and we just ignore all sorts of other people in trouble. I think it's nonsense.
Our monthly check-in with Chris Powell, former managing editor of the Journal Inquirer Manchester, still writes a column for them that's picked up in many other spots. One of Chris's recent columns touching on something that I know he is passionate about, education. And you may have seen the stories, too, folks, where there are a lot of these programs now being designed to maybe go after and find the root causes and maybe lower chronic absenteeism in Connecticut schools. Chris, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, the state education department says the average chronic absenteeism rate in Connecticut's elementary school system, high schools, is 25%, which is substantially above where it was a few years ago. Now, this doesn't mean that 25% of the kids are missing every day of school. It means 25% of all the kids in Connecticut are missing at least 10% of their instructional time. But even this 10% causes an enormous problem for teachers because, they're trying to catch the kids up on all the lessons that they missed. It's really eroding education. And so, yes, we have a bunch of school boards and the state education department trying to figure out what's causing this increase in chronic absenteeism. I think they're barking up the wrong tree. I think it's fairly obvious that parents and kids, I don't think they see the necessity of going to school in Connecticut. And I say that because it has been public knowledge, certainly at least since Judge Thomas Mukauscher's decision in the most recent school financing case about 5 or 6 years ago, that the only consistent policy we have in public education in Connecticut is social promotion. Mm-hmm. I think the kids and their parents have figured out that, as Judge Mukauscher wrote in his opinion, anybody can go to school in Connecticut and not learn a damn thing and still be promoted every year from grade to grade and be given a high school diploma even when he's totally illiterate. That's what the judge said happened, and we see it all the time in test results. I mean, half the kids in Connecticut, according to the National Educational Progress proficiency tests, are getting into their senior year without ever having mastered high school math and English. We have social promotion in Connecticut. I think the kids know it. They know they don't have to go to school to graduate, and their parents know that they don't have to get them to school. Most of those parents that with the troublesome absent kids, they're on one sort of welfare system or another, and I think the kids are growing up in homes where they see, hey, look, mom doesn't work or she's got a menial job, and still she gets a welfare stipend and Section 8 housing voucher and food stamps and Medicaid and other assistance. Well, we get by on that. Why do we need to go to school? And I think this is the angle that educators should pursue. It's, I don't think it's any great mystery. Look, if there was a prison sentence for not going to school or not getting your kid to school, I think the problem would go away. But there's no necessity to go to school in Connecticut. You're going to get a high school diploma whether you go or not. And if you can't support yourself, that's all right. We got all sorts of income supports waiting for you.
And Chris, my parents always used to talk about when they were still around the notion of a truant officer when they were growing up. I guess we could use those in some way, shape, or form now.
Well, yeah, what Hartford is doing at one of its magnet schools, it calls up kids who don't show up. I guess on Wednesdays. Wednesdays they tend not to show up at the school because it's a reduced day.
Hmm.
When we've got to have school staff members go out to meet kids at their home and walk them to school,
yeah,
to solve this chronic absenteeism problem, as they're doing in Hartford. Yes, this is hapless. I mean, this is just people taking absolutely no responsibility for themselves and their children.
Chris, I have to ask you finally here. I know you've probably been looking with some interest, as we've discussed it here on the show, and I've heard from legislators about this, the verbal cha-cha going on between Governor Lamont and the president of UConn. And the governor, I think, Chris, refreshingly, at least at this point, I'm sure there'll be some deal somewhere, but that little cha-cha between Mr. Lamont and President Marich regarding UConn's funding has been rather interesting, hasn't it?
Yeah, yesterday I wrote my column for Monday about it, Paul. That the headline I put on it was, for one brief shining moment, a governor stands up to UConn. Now, he may back down as soon as one of the basketball teams wins the national championship again, and everybody in Connecticut goes back to thinking that UConn can do no wrong. But the governor has proposed ever increasing appropriations for UConn. He says the real problem is that they're emergency federal COVID-19 funding is running out, and they want to turn that into regular funding. Well, that was never the idea.
Yeah, so we'll see how that shakes out. Chris Powell. Chris, as usual, great to hear from you. We'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. There you go. All right.